You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hi, Bill.
Good morning, Matt.
This is Matt Lewis. For those of you who don't know, I'm talking today with Bill Scherr. Bill, how are you?
This is a very formal introduction to the DMZ. I'm not sure what your angle is here.
I've just been listening to a lot of Robert Wright.
Is that right?
Hello, Bill.
That's how he does it?
It's something like that. Yeah, but normally, I mean, you and I do this every week. He often has it. Sometimes it's Mickey, but usually it's someone different. So I don't know. I'm feeling a little weird. Maybe, maybe it's the election.
I mean,
I think we're finally.
Don't you think that you started?
It seems like Democrats have, we won't go into it, but my latest column is how Democrats avoided what I thought they were going to do, which is to do what Trump did.
Well, but isn't this because of you? I mean, haven't you started a trend of center-right Republicans pouring into Democratic primaries and stopping Bernie Sanders?
Well, you laugh, Bill, but there's something to this. In fact, there's a New York Times piece out right now, Alex Burns, who talks about how Biden has formed a coalition of the party's most loyal voters and its newest converts. Guess who the newest converts are, Bill?
Matt Lewis, Never Trumpers.
Matt Lewis and the News. Yes. Matt Lewis and the Never Trumpers. I don't like to use the word hero to describe me, but sometimes maybe it's appropriate.
You know, I have a piece up at Real Clear Politics that went up Monday morning where I talked about how, you know, Sanders and Warren failed to meet their own standards. You know, Warren was on the rise, producing plan after plan, and developing this reputation of being, you know, almost superhuman in her ability to take wonky concepts and articulate them in punchy populist ways that would be very electorally powerful. And that hits a brick wall when she gets to single payer health care. It's not just that she dodged the questions about cost. It's not just that she relented and coughed up numbers that dissatisfied the moderates. It's not just that she had a transition plan that made the Bernie-crats think she wasn't fully committed. It's that she no longer seemed like she had this superhuman ability to explain everything. And everything falls apart after that. Bernie gets a second look after that. And it seems like he's making some inroads with not just consolidating the left, but with some moderates on the premise that I have superhuman electability powers. I'm going to turn out the youth in such huge numbers in ways that nobody else can, and taking unlikely voters and bringing them into the process, and that's what's going to beat Trump. And then you get to Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada, and he kind of wins with the popular vote, but the youth numbers are not eye-popping. It's not enough to make Warren bow out and say, this guy's a runaway train. It's not enough to make other moderates jump on board. Mm. And Biden has the opportunity to redeem himself. Biden's the one guy in this who says, I can win the African-American vote in South Carolina, and he wins it above and beyond what the poll said he was going to do. That instills a confidence that his theory of the case can be met. And I know I wrote this piece before Michigan, what you just read. He not only is meeting his mark with African-Americans, his argument that he can bring over soft Republicans is bearing fruit as well.
Yes. And I think we should concede that Bernie's theory was a plausible theory. It was an interesting theory. And sometimes, you know, what we know historically is that it's hard to get young people to actually show up, right, and vote. But every once in a while, someone does things that nobody thinks you can do. Trump certainly did that. And so I think Bernie's theory was unconventional, but it was, you know, this revolution, and it was exciting, and it was plausible, but it needed to be tested, and it failed. He actually cannot do that. And Joe Biden's theory, which I think you and I both subscribe to, although I certainly became worried about Biden's ability to be the vessel at some point to implement it. But I think you and I turned out to be right. I mean, I wrote a piece back, I think, in December about how – I'm trying to think of how I titled it. But it was essentially how decent, sane Democrats – were essentially the silent majority, mm-hmm. and how they were going to save the Democratic Party and maybe America. And I think that that actually turns out to be now the much more likely scenario than Bernie's revolution.
Well, yeah, I had a tweet story about this after Super Tuesday, because people who are longtime fans of the DMZ know how many times I've been wrong. It's not like I have superhuman abilities to be right. But I like to think I've gotten better as I've gone along. And I was very careful this time. I never.
We're like the stock market, Bill. I think if you stick with us over the long trend, you're making money. If you're betting on us in the long haul, we've been doing this for a decade, you've made money.
I
don't even want to cite the time that I predicted John Boehner was going to just resign for being the speaker, and then happened.
That's true. I never went as far as say Joe Biden's going to be the nominee. I was never predicting. But I've been saying for a long time that the Democratic Party electorate is more moderate than you think. And once I saw the data, I said majority moderate. Maybe not huge majority moderate, but tilts moderate. And if you're going to be a Bernie or a Warren or anybody else running to the left, you need to be cognizant of the electorate you're trying to appeal to. And I wasn't looking at hard to find data, but yet there are so many campaigns, you know, Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Kirsten Gillibrand, as well as Warren and Sanders, that for some reason refuse to see that data, or made a calculation that, well, that's not the data for Iowa, New Hampshire, and Nevada, and I got to win there first. So I can't run a general election campaign. I can't run a Super Tuesday campaign just yet. Bernie's people made the calculation. They said this fairly openly early in the process. We can win with 30% in the early contest, and then the bandwagon effect will happen after that. And then there was this one poll that came out last month showing head-to-heads with Bernie and the other Democrats where he's winning. And, I mean, everybody say all of a sudden, aha, Bernie's favorables are high, he's well-liked, no one thinks he's a demon, people don't have the same antipathy to socialism as they used to. When it narrows down to two, he's got this. And, you know, I wasn't prepared to say this is wrong, but I was saying to myself, this is one poll that flies in the face of a couple of years of data. I'm not going to run with this and say the tide has turned. And it didn't take that long to pierce that bubble once it was clear that Bernie wasn't broadening his coalition.
You know, let's go back, though. I think that it was unknown whether you could lose – you know, whether you could come in like fourth or fifth place in Iowa, fourth or fifth place in New Hampshire – And second place in Nevada, and then come back. I mean, I think it was to the analysts who were skeptical that you could do that. I understand where they're coming from.
Oh yeah,
that was.
And I had a tweet a while back saying, you know, if Biden came in fourth, you can't be sure he could the firewall would hold. And a lot of Biden people got mad at me. You know, you wait and see. Like, I'm not saying he can't. I'm just saying it is plausible that a fourth place in Iowa would make people reassess his candidacy and think whether he had legs. But I also said that South Carolina is not going to just do whatever Iowa and New Hampshire say they're going to do, number one.
Yep. You were really right about this, Bill. I mean, more, you know, again, like an old married couple, we've grown together, and I see people, you know, commenting about that. But let me just give some props. If you were betting with Bill Scher this year, you were making money. You were really on that. And I'm glad. That's one of the reasons why I will continue to do this show, whether it makes financial sense or not, because I think by virtue of having these conversations, you kept me on the straight and narrow a little bit with Biden. I mean, you were very right about this one.
Well, it's one of the things that I said that I didn't write, but I said on your podcast with Joe Trippi, when we're talking about Iowa, it was right before Iowa, and I pointed out...
I love Joe, but that podcast doesn't hold up as well for Joe.
Well, I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's fair. He said in that podcast, Iowa always surprises, and it did. Iowa was definitely, and I'm not just saying because they couldn't count their votes.
Surprised by being totally pointless and declaring.
That's not fair. Buttigieg was a genuine surprise that night. It impacted the race. It impacted the trajectory of the race, which is not something that I thought could not happen. I never said it could impact.
You're arguing against interest here, Bill.
My point was I wasn't going to dictate. The winner of Iowa wasn't going to dictate who wins the subsequent states because the demographics of the other races were different. So I don't think I'm right. He's wrong in that.
You should kick Trippy while he's down, but I admire the fact that you don't do that.
One thing I did say on that podcast was that the only person who ever did worse than third in Iowa and still get the nomination was John McCain. So never a Democrat, but there was a Republican that did that. And he bolted Iowa. He said, screw this. This state doesn't like me. I don't like them. I'm going to go somewhere else. And
was that before or after he started putting ethanol in his cereal?
It was after, because he tried to drink the ethanol and said, you know, I can't drink enough ethanol to impress these bastards. I'm getting out of here. But he had a home in New Hampshire, which allowed him to recover more quickly than Biden. But I think bigger than that, he was a nationally known figure. He had a national base that could withstand.
Just like Joe Biden.
Exactly.
Yep.
Biden is – there has never been a current or former VP that lost a primary in the modern primary area except for Dan Quayle. And Dan Quayle was a uniquely unpopular VP.
And he was running against the son of – the last president.
The president that he served.
Which sort of takes away some of the benefit of being the run, you know, the heir apparent, right?
Exactly. So now Biden, you know, I'm not saying, again, not preordained, you know, Biden made mistakes, he had weaknesses, but there's something about being a former VP. You've been in the public eye for 4 to 8 years. You've built relationships, and in Biden's case, with a popular president. I mean, you know, Walter Mondale was a VP for an unpopular ex-president, and had a harder time getting the nomination, but still got it.
And so that's true.
So you can withstand a fourth and a fifth if you have someone with that pedigree.
All that's true, but it still doesn't matter unless they're African-American voters in South Carolina who – held hands and created a firewall, and they did not abandon him. They were incredibly loyal. And as much as I want to give people like me props for being part of that coalition, they single-handedly, you know, saved Biden when his back was against the wall and resurrected his political life. It's really amazing. And I have to say, just was this like a Tom Friedman sort of Uber? Is he the guy who talks about the Uber drivers?
The
cab driver. This happens to me a lot. But so like yesterday, I'm in a car, African-American woman driver. Awesome. Coolest person in the world. Talking about the coronavirus. She's trusting the Lord, which speaks to me, like clearly devout, praying for everybody that the scientists are going to develop a vaccine for this thing. But also, on top of cleanliness, she tells me about how every time a new person comes or goes from the car, she is like using Clorox wipes to clean the door and, you know, everything like this. Eventually, the topic turns to Trump, and she can't stand him. You know what I mean? But in a loving way. And I had this revelation. It's not even a revelation because it's been developing for a long time now. But this insight that it's like, I really identify a lot with the African American community, like a lot more than you might think as a conservative white male. Mm-hmm. I'm like, these, and again, I'm stereotyping here, but I think Joe Biden is doing so well with the African American community that you could almost generalize here. It's so interesting to me how we have these shared values in many ways, and yet for all of my life until recently, we were very different in terms of voting politically. So anyway, it is what it is. It's an interesting phenomenon, yeah.
Well, to your point about how South Carolina African Americans saved Biden's candidacy, there was, you know, a New York State legislator who's a newly elected Democratic socialist who repeated a comment that was made 4 years ago as well. Like, who cares what Democrats in red states have to say? Why should we let these people who have no say in the general election determine who the nominee is going to be? And I responded on Twitter. This is the fact that Democrats in deep red and deep blue states,
yeah,
is the only say these people get in determining who our president is. They should have some say who determines what our president is.
Well,
they should
only
be
that,
disenfranchised up and down the entire calendar.
I completely agree. And I think that, number one, you know, you're nominating somebody who's going to reflect your party at a national level. There should be some buy-in and consensus. Then whoever becomes president represents the entire country, not just Republicans, not just Democrats, and certainly not just Democrats who happen to be in blue states. But on top of that, I think that African Americans in Mississippi and South Carolina are serving a valuable function as almost a, not signaling, but what they are telling you about these candidates is applicable in Michigan amongst African Americans who live in Michigan, where you need a high turnout. And amongst kind of working class white folk who are not woke, who are not college professors. So I think that these red state Democrats are serving a function for the Democratic Party, preventing them from nominating somebody who couldn't win crossover swing voters in places like Pennsylvania or Michigan.
Speaking of working
class. Does that make sense, Bill?
Yeah. Speaking of working class white folks.
Because sometimes I wonder if the things I say, sometimes with writing it's easier.
speaking of working class white folk, what did you make of the episode yesterday where Joe Biden got his finger in a factory worker's face who was confronting him about gun rights and accusing Biden of wanting to take people's guns away? Did you, culturally conservative, center-right Republican Matt Lewis, say, oh, right, this is what's so terrible about Joe Biden. Oh, what have I just done? How's he going to survive this race? Or did you say, you know, that's good old Uncle Joe. That's fighting Joe.
So let me set this up by saying people who look at me and they see, obviously, a suave cosmopolitan. I'm joking. But people may not believe or fully appreciate just how country I am and how much, you know, this is where I still spend a lot of time in West Virginia. You know, maybe as much as 40% of my time, if not more, in West Virginia, which is not that far, believe it or not, from DC, but it might as well be a million miles away, psychically. My mom lives in Pennsylvania, voted for Trump, drove people to the polls to vote for Trump. My dad was a prison guard for 30 years in Western Maryland. When I went to school, they said, what do you want to be when you grow up? The number one answer was farmer. The number two answer was truck driver. My favorite uncle, whom I like just took my kids to visit last weekend, his profession was a painter, not an artist. So this is where I come from. Like I don't have a lot of connection to like Michigan, let's say. But culturally, I get the people who vote. Like my entire, I took my kids to the Lewis family reunion back in September. I think we talked about it. And Trump would have got, if we had done a straw poll, Trump would have gotten 105% of the vote there. So like, just to set it up, these are my people. This is where I come from. And Bill and I are both country music aficionados to boot. So having said all of that, and I will put in one caveat, Biden made some mistakes. Like some of the things Biden said to that factory worker were like technically not true. You know what I mean?
Was it AR-14, not AR-15?
Right. But let's put that aside because I don't think that matters to normal people. That struck me as a great moment. I thought that is Jeb Bush could not have done what Joe Biden did. Mitt Romney could not have done what Joe Biden did. Hillary Clinton could not have done what Joe Biden did. That is Joe, and that is how you could potentially win voters in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. That's just who he is. He's, you know, it's funny, but you could be a super rich guy like Donald Trump, like FDR, and connect to the common man and everyday people, and as Biden, as Bernie says, working people. He'd say working, but working people. Or you could be someone who, like me, actually has a much better claim to blue collar voters. In the case compared to, like, say, Donald Trump, and they may see you as like an elite. There is a certain people have a manner about them, and Joe Biden has that. That is why Joe Biden was always the best nominee for Democrats, because he can win Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. That is probably where the election will be decided.
So you're saying that, I mean, you're a gun rights guy. You grew up in a gun rights world. You live in a gun rights place. You're saying, because Joe Biden doesn't come across like a secular, cultural, elite, academic type, that he can that he can give what for to a working class white guy, because he seems like a working class white guy himself.
Yeah. What would a working class white guy do if someone started giving them shit on the floor of the factory? Exactly what Biden did.
That's very interesting.
Now, what I think is going to be interesting is if he keeps. So let me just say, full stop. That was a win for Joe Biden yesterday, and it's silly that the Republican Party and their rapid response people. One of the main guy I used to have an office literally next door to him at the Daily Caller. Which is just how incestuous this thing is. It's silly that they put that out because it's another
Bernie people too. Like the Republicans, I kind of get they want to say Joe Biden is another gun grabber like all other Democrats. He's no different. I get the knee jerk response. The Bernie folks, I mean, not this is why he lost. He was already losing, but you know the gun issue is the one issue where they're kind of weak on because Bernie's record is impure. One of the few areas where he is impure, although even though he's scurried to a more orthodox position for Democrats now, and Bernie calls himself a fighter. Bernie is someone who doesn't kowtow to the right. Why would they be pushing out that Biden is willing to, you know, stick his neck out and defend his position on gun control? Where the Bernie folks and the Trump folks are dovetailing is they want to feed a notion that Joe Biden is mentally unstable. And is in cognitive decline, whether or not everyone uses those exact words and phrases, that is certainly what is being pushed out on social media over the past several days. And, you know, I've played a small part in this development. I wasn't 100% sure of this, but I thought it's silly. I was the first guy on social media to note that this video of Joe Biden stumbling over a phrase about reelecting Trump was pushed out by the Trump campaign as making it sound like he said we should reelect Trump, and they cut off the second part of the sentence. And I only knew that because there were a bunch of Bernie people, not from the campaign, just random folks on Twitter, who were pushing this video into my feed. I'm like, where is this coming from? And then I saw, Trump's, I think his campaign manager, Dan Cascavino, not campaign manager, he's a White House title, pushing it out. And just, I looked at it and I was like, this doesn't seem right to me. And I went back and watched the whole speech, and the whole speech was a pretty normal Biden speech with not really any mistakes except for this one moment where he gets a little bit tangled up and he corrects himself and it's like, whatever. And
Biden says, Biden makes enough gaffes and malapropisms that you shouldn't have to selectively edit and misrepresent what he says. Like that, like number one, the fact that they are like deceptively editing, I think is stupid because it's going to call into question now when Biden legitimately says something, stupid.
Well,
and he will.
Well, I don't 100% agree with that, but I just want to finish this story. Okay. So I put out a tweet saying this is disinformation from the Trump campaign. This is the full Biden quote. Here's the link to the full speech. And that tweet goes really viral and it's picked up by one of Biden's rapid response guys. And this is really late at night. I think over the weekend. I think it was like midnight, something like that. Forgive me if I get my time's wrong. I remember it being pretty late.
When normal people are sleeping.
Right. And when I saw the rapid response, I pick it up. Like I thought, they must have seen this before me. I can't be the first guy to have noticed this. But there is a Daily Beast piece up by Hannah Trudeau where she walks through the narrative of what happens. And the way she structures it, she has me doing it first and the Biden people picking it up after me based on that rapid response guy's response. And there's some critique in there that the Biden people were a little slow off the mark on this one. Now, it eventually becomes such a news story that Twitter labels Dan Scavino's tweet as manipulated media. And honestly, I don't know if that happens if I don't tweet it out first.
Yeah,
the Biden people hadn't done it yet. I mean, maybe they would have gotten to it eventually. But I don't think the Biden people on the whole have been slow on the dime on these things, but it's raising this question whether they need to be a little sharper, a little more.
This is the wisdom of the crowds, Bill. Right. This is the beauty of crowdsourcing.
Now, to your other point there, I don't necessarily, I'm not sanguine that Trump people, possibly with some tacit help from like Green Party people or other Bernie or bust types, pushing out these manipulated videos, maybe combined with some videos that, are not doctored because Biden makes his own flubs, of course, as you note.
Right.
I think at this point, more so than I think the general election is going to be Hunter, Hunter, Hunter. I now think it's going to be dementia, dementia, dementia.
Or it could be coronavirus, coronavirus, coronavirus.
Well, I don't know why Biden's the problem there. I mean, as far as like, what's the number they're going to do on Biden? It seemed like in January it was going to be a Hunter thing. That was going to be the emails. That was going to be the server next 8 months. And now I think the Hunter thing's really played out. I assume no new shoes to drop there, but you could take any Biden
things.
Flub or manufacturer Biden flub and accuse him of literally losing his mind all the way through.
It's the two things they did to Hillary, right? So Hunter is the email server and dementia is Hillary fainting.
Right.
It's the same playbook. I just think Biden's a lot less susceptible to it. For a whole bunch of reasons, and I think Hillary was almost uniquely unlikable in certain parts of the country, especially the states that matter. I realize she won the popular vote. Let's give her credit for that. But it turns out that another candidate probably would have beaten Donald Trump in 2016. And I think that so I think Joe Biden's less susceptible. So number one, Trump himself says things. They're all old, all of them. Biden, Bernie, Trump. Trump says a lot of things that are awkward and bizarre and mispronounced. He tweets so I think that the Biden people and maybe Bloomberg's money could help maybe just level the playing field here.
Maybe, but I don't know if you want
this issue off the table.
I don't know if you want to race between like who is sundowning the least. I don't think that's the best turf for Biden.
Well, you know what? That should be, say what you will, if Biden wants to win, that should be a component of a larger public relations strategy. Certainly not the entire message, I would hope.
Well, I think Biden has to.
You also look. I think I heard the next debate. There's not going to be an audience because of coronavirus.
Yeah.
That probably hurts Biden. I'm not sure, but I think they're going to be seated. Maybe that helps Biden. I think Biden actually may perform better when it's only one opponent.
Well, that ironically, I agree. I don't think it really matters if
my point is that I think Biden can do things now that he has more leverage for the next several months at least to put himself in a better position. Now, here's the one thing. What if, and I certainly do not wish this on anybody, but Trump and Biden are both out there among the people shaking hands with
I don't think they're going to be among the people shaking hands for the next several months.
Okay. if Biden, I would say that both of them would probably be considered vulnerable according to, I don't know, CDC guidelines
right.
or whatever,
exactly.
Just based on their age alone.
Right. Right.
But I would think Biden is more politically vulnerable to that. If he gets the sniffles, that could hurt Joe Biden, right?
Well, I mean, either one of them could have a cold at some point in this campaign. But I think, like with Hillary and pneumonia, like if it comes and goes, like bringing the heart attack, if it comes and goes and you look fine afterwards, I think that kind of thing fades.
Has anyone ever bounced back from a heart attack better than Bernie Sanders?
It's like, well, maybe
unbelievable.
Maybe Dick Cheney.
Well, that guy's indestructible.
But I think that, I partially agree with what you were saying before. I don't think sitting or standing matters to Biden. I don't get the sense that Biden gets exhausted because he has to stand during debates. I mean, if they want to play expectations games with that, they can go ahead. I do think a one-on-one debate, my guess is he is more comfortable in that setting than the 10-person scrum. We'll see, but that's when I see Biden.
Okay, so this will be a test, though, right? Because we could now compare that to the Palin debate and the Paul Ryan debate.
Correct.
And that will help tell us if he's lost a step. But guess what? Of course he has. Everybody has. And I mean, Donald Trump is not the same communicator he was 10 years ago.
Well, and there's a difference between.
Neither is.
Difference between lost a step and cognitive decline. Like, I mean,
yes.
I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to diagnose from afar. But to tell me, can't you see it? I'm like, well, I can see a difference. I can see a difference in his manner from, 10 years ago. But it is a plausible conclusion that his energy level might be less than it was.
Yeah.
And the management of his stutter is harder because his energy level is down a few notches. But that's not the same as cognitive decline. I don't know where I am. I don't know what Barack Obama's
right.
name is. I don't know what the Declaration of Independence is. These are all potentially explainable by how people manage stutters and have to work around certain words and syllables.
And Biden has a track record of gaffes, and I think
well, yeah, I mean,
And so I think that helps. I also think it helps that people like him and know him and they're familiar with him. There's a lot more grace there. I think also the fact that he seems to, in a way, be getting better. Like, let's take that argument he had on the factory floor with the obvious caveat that I think he got some facts wrong. He seemed pretty quick to me. That didn't seem like a doddering old fool. You know, that seemed to me like a spunky man.
Have you seen the video from 1987? And this was in the wake of the Neil Kinnock plagiarism scandal that derailed that campaign, where a voter is asking, I forget what the voter asked, but it was a fairly calm question, a little pointed, and Biden just lights into them. I bet I have a higher IQ than you, buddy. And so, like, number one, like, Biden's always been willing to throw a rhetorical punch to a voter.
Yeah.
Like, he has always made weird gaffes, like in 2008 when he was announced for VP and he calls Barack Obama Barack America. He's always had weird embellishments, the whole Neil Kinnock thing. I mean, it's not just that he's took Neil Kinnock's speech and said he was the first of his generation to go to college. He had previously properly cited Neil Kinnock. So it wasn't like this deliberate con. I'm going to pretend Neil Kinnock never gave this speech. He sometimes credited him and sometimes didn't, which is just weird. He's always done certain weird things like that. So the fact that he does, so it's like Nelson Mandela,
which is a weird defense, but nevertheless, I think it is.
I'm not saying I can easily explain it. I'm saying it doesn't say to me cognitive decline because he's always done stuff like this. And one thing I would add,
I would
one more thing here. This thing that was immediately fatal to him in 1987 is not immediately fatal to him now because, number one, you've been around a long time, been VP, you have a general sense, he knows how to do the job. And number two, Donald Trump does all these same things and worse.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was just going to say, Bill. Even for me personally, I could imagine a scenario where I would have been very opposed to Joe Biden on the grounds of norms and civility and things like that, that really, in comparison to Trump and in the world that Trump has given us, are just kind of niceties, you know, just sort of like it would be a luxury to be able to be concerned about those things, right? So Trump has changed the context of a lot of things. I think making Biden much more palatable, much more mainstream, much more, and in so many ways. So it is an interesting development there.
But I do think, I think he'll be on the factory floor a lot less, if at all, because of coronavirus. Sure. And I think there are certain settings that he's more comfortable in, potentially a one-on-one debate. I certainly got a one-on-one interview. I think he is much better.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, Bill. What happens now? I know, like, a week ago or so, there were protesters who got on stage at a Biden, I think it was at a Biden rally, and Joe Biden and Simone Sanders sort of ran interference. What happens if that factory worker just kicks Joe Biden's ass for the public to see? I assume that Biden isn't the brawler he might have been when he stood up to Corn Pop. I assume that a factory worker 40 years younger could probably kick his ass, assuming the Secret Service isn't there, or God knows nobody was there protecting him a week ago on stage. How would that, I mean, this is such a bizarre question to ask, but in 2020, I think it's plausible to, like, that could be the election.
If you lose
Biden
a fist fight,
if Biden knocks him out, he's president. This is like Idiocracy.
The Gianforte strategy. Biden,
if that guy beats up Biden, then Bernie's the nominee.
Well, I think he's not going to get into a fist fight in the campaign, but I do think
he's saying things to people that not that long ago they would have had a duel to settle. I mean, they would have shot each other.
I mean, I think you see he would have had a duel if he was a politician in the 19th century. But I think he needs to put the dementia thing at bay, which I think is going to be circulated for the next several months now. I don't think they're going to stop pushing that line. He needs to be seen. He needs to be on TV a lot. He needs to be on TV in unscripted moments. I mean, I think teleprompter speeches are great for Biden. This notion that, oh, he needs a teleprompter as a crutch. You see this stuff because he doesn't use the teleprompter as a crutch. He refuses to be scripted. That's why you see as much of Biden as you do. His best speeches are teleprompter speeches, and I bet we see more of them. But he also needs the unscripted TV interviews. He needs the one-on-one debates. I think in these settings, he shows fluency with policy. He talks policy details. In the New York Times editorial board interviews, if you read the transcripts, you know, most of the other candidates, the exception of Warren, you know, it's a lot of platitudes. They didn't go deep on policy. And there was a passage in the New York Times editorial board transcript where Biden's talking about his strategy with China and a certain hypothetical, and it was like, you know, a real 6-point plan kind of thing. And the New York Times transcribers annotated, Biden's the only person to actually answer this question with any policy prescription. I mean, people don't read white papers when deciding their candidates, but they want to have a sense that they know the basics. And I think Biden has the capacity to do that. And the more he does that, puts to rest this notion that, like, he's literally falling apart before our eyes. So go on.
Let me just say, I think you're totally right. They're going to try to paint him as being having dementia. I mean, that's going to happen. It's going to be horrible. It's going to be ugly. And it will. It will happen. It is happening. It's predictable. And there's another sort of subplot to that, which is to say, somebody else is going to be pulling the strings. So if you think Joe Biden is a moderate, there's going to be left-wing people who are really running the show because Biden's just a puppet. So that's going to happen.
Well, this is why VP matters so much. You might think, well, he needs to have a left-wing VP to bring the Bernie folks in and unify the party and have an ideological balance. And while I do think he needs – his weakness is young voters. They need to do something to shore up that weakness. I don't think he can pick an ideological mismatch to do it. Because you already saw Trump's statement, the campaign statement, which is Bernie and Biden are two sides of the same coin. They're both socialists. You know, Biden can't pick a Bernie or Warren, in my opinion.
I used to think that Kamala was the pick for Biden. I'm more and more convinced it should be Amy Klobuchar.
I disagree with you. I think the case for Kamala is even stronger now.
No, I disagree. Look, Amy. So number one, Biden doesn't have any problems getting African American voters. I think that Amy is young enough. You have to balance that out. Young, but not too young. She's a female. U.S. Senator, you can't say she lacks the competence or the experience. Tough. She lasted longer than Kamala. Lasted longer in the primary. I think she earned that. And who's going to win working class votes in the Rust Belt? Because that's what the Electoral College is about, I think. So for me, Amy's the obvious choice. Why do you think Kamala?
Here's my counter. Number one, Biden says, I win the upper Midwest. I don't need help there. I win Pennsylvania. I win Michigan. I win Wisconsin. My weakness is young voters. He doesn't need Kamala to help with African Americans. He needs Kamala to help with young people of all races.
Do we have reason to believe she could do that?
I mean, I don't think she gets every last Bernie crowd. There are going to be some Bernie or busters, no matter what you do. I do think she, to the extent that young people want to see that their vision of a multicultural America will be realized, they will see, I think there'll be an implicit assumption. I don't think Biden will say this, but it'll be an implicit assumption. This is your nominee for 2024. Right. This is the future of the party. And I think to have a woman of color is the is the easiest way to accomplish that. And the list of qualified women of color is very short. And it does not include Stacey Abrams. You cannot put someone whose highest rank is House, is State House, I'm sorry, State Senate Minority Leader, former, and say, this is the next qualified person in case I die or I don't run in four years. That does not wash.
But that's a Sarah Palin pick.
But Kamala can do that. You have Senator Cortez Masto, who is Latina in Nevada. You have Tammy Duckworth, who's Asian American, also a WAMP-UT war vet. You have the governor of New Mexico, Lujan Grisham. And there's some talk about Representative Val Demings. I'm generally not a big fan of House members as VP picks. I don't think they have that qualification bar as high as a governor or a senator. But she was the police chief of Orlando. And so there's an argument you make that gives you a little extra
something.
I think
what we have here is a philosophical difference, a strategic difference.
Yes.
I am assuming that Donald Trump, that this election, if you're a Democrat, this election is about Donald Trump. So the Democratic base is going to be enthused and excited. Joe Biden is already beating Bernie by turnout. Turnout's huge for Joe Biden.
With older suburbanites and African Americans, not with young voters.
Right. And I think that's the coalition that delivers the general election to Bill. And I think Amy Klobuchar is much better with that cohort. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, she would be better with that cohort. I'm just saying Biden's getting that cohort himself. Number one. Number two, Klobuchar wasn't that good. I mean, she's fine. Oh. She's not a disaster, but she's not. I mean, she was mediocre on the stump. She had some good debates. I don't want to be totally dismissive. She had her moments.
How did Kamala Harris do? How did she perform?
Kamala made some very key strategic mistakes. I think going at Biden in retrospect was not the way to go, though understandable with what the information she had at the time. I think she made a strategic error in running more to the left than she actually is, and that got her caught between the two ideological camps in the party. But as a basic performer on the stump, she is excellent.
Here's where she made her mistake, I think.
And she can prosecute a case, and she can go toe-to-toe with Mike Pence in a VP debate.
I agree, she's tough. I think the reason that I don't pick her is that she made the same mistake that Beto O'Rourke made and that Elizabeth Warren made, which is the mistake you did not make. She assumed that this was about going to the left, and if she had run, she has the potential to be a more pragmatic, moderate, even, dare say, law and order type candidate. She chose not to go that direction. And I think she's going to turn off a lot of the folks that I know, my people, who might vote. If Kamala had run a different kind of campaign, that would be different. But the brand that she established.
Well, you know the mindset of the center-right, you know, Biden curious voter more than I do. I mean, Kamala made that mistake. Absolutely. I think she has scurried back. And she would fully scurry back. Like, she would salute Joe Biden's talking point. She would not go rogue. And there isn't, I don't think there's something that she said that is as permanently scarring as Beto, hell yeah, we're going to take your guns away. There isn't a line like that that they would hang over forever. I think Beto's going to carry that forever, no matter what he does in his life. I mean, he might be a fine progressive activist, but I think it's very hard for him to be a general election candidate now. I think Kamala can get past the mistakes that she made and be seen as, look, because in her heart, she is a pragmatist. She can be a convincing pragmatist because that is who she actually is.
I'm not saying it makes sense for this to be the deal breaker, but what about the fact that Kamala allegedly had this friendship with Biden and his family and his sons, and that she tried to basically put a knife in his back in that first debate, and damn near succeeded.
This is a feature, not a bug. This is showing the magnanimity of Joe Biden, that the bonds they have transcend petty politics, that he can forgive enemies. This is why you can be confident he can look Lindsey Graham in the eye and say, "Let's still do a bill together. The past is behind us." You know, why,
you're good at this, Bill.
Why did Barack Obama pick Joe Biden after Joe Biden condescendingly and patronizingly said Barack Obama was the first clear articulate African American politician? I mean, yes, Biden gave some elder statesman half. Biden's good on foreign policy. I think
That was Biden being politically incorrect and insensitive.
And it was Barack Obama saying, I don't care if you're a politically incorrect, racially insensitive white person in Pennsylvania. It's all going to be good when I'm president.
Well, you make a compelling case about that part. I still think Amy is the better pick. And part of it is, I mean, do you buy the argument, Bill, that there are different maps, there are different ways you get to 270 to win, but the most likely way involves the Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, states that Trump won by just 77,000 votes in 2016. And assuming that's true, I would suspect that Amy's a better match there.
Well, I mean, you're right. That is the easiest path. I do think Biden's going to want to spread the map. He doesn't want to have just one path. He's going to want to play in Arizona. I think Arizona's the most promising Sun Belt state. You know, if they want Florida, maybe they would go with Val Demings and hope that she could flip the center stripe of Orlando, Tampa. Again, I think Kamala's a better pick, but they might consider that. They want Biden can focus on Upper Midwest, and the VP can focus on Sun Belt. Try to reach for that higher hanging fruit. Because what he really wants is a convincing victory. He wants to bury Trump. He wants to break Trump's hold on the party because he does care about governing. He knows if it's a narrow win and a narrowly divided Senate, worse, a McConnell-run Senate, that's a very painful 4 years as president.
We should say, friend of the show, Josh Krausar, had a really good piece in National Journal last week about it starting to look like Republicans could lose the Senate, which is, you know, I think we should just stop for a second and appreciate how crazy the last 3 weeks have been, not just for Joe Biden overtaking Bernie Sanders, but 3 weeks ago, it looked very likely that Donald Trump would be reelected. And 3 weeks later, I think it's a jump ball now. And as Josh Krausar argues, you know, you start looking at states like Montana, states like North Carolina, states like Colorado, states like Arizona. You know, Republicans may have their hands full in the Senate.
Well, and does Joe Biden, and I don't know the answer to this, does he run a traditional presidential campaign where he generally stays focused on the states that he needs to win? Or does he say, look, I'm going to go to Montana and campaign with Steve Bullock. I'm going to go to Texas and campaign with whoever the nominee is going to be there. Even if it's not a state that's an easy play for me, we go to South Carolina and campaign for Jamie Harrison. Just to say, look, I did my due diligence there. I didn't forget you guys. I think we got a shot here. I mean, he can go to those states and be welcomed in a way that Bernie Sanders couldn't.
And say, or just like the factory floor. I mean, that's so important. I think that Biden has the working class, blue collar country. I mean, I could take Joe Biden to the Lewis family reunion. He probably threatened to beat a couple of those old boys up, but I think he could fit in otherwise pretty well.
We're pushing an hour here, Matt, so we probably should call it a day.
I don't know why, but I feel like I could go another hour. And I'm normally the one going, okay, Bill, wrap it up, buddy. Enough about Harrison and Tilden. But okay.
So I mentioned my Real Clear Politics article, why Warren and Sanders failed to meet their own standards. I got a piece in the queue at Politico. It's still in the editing process, so it's not up yet, but keep an eye out for my next thing there, hopefully within a day or two. And what do you have in the hopper?
Well, I'm kind of excited about this. Speaking of the Lewis family, my first cousin, Tommy Geisbert, was, do you remember when Time Magazine did their Person of the Year and it was the Ebola doctor? He was one of them that he was featured in that. And so he's like a microbiologist or virologist, or I'm not even sure. But I'm going to have him on my podcast, good Lord willing, tomorrow to talk about the coronavirus. And I'm hoping to get, based on the fact that he's my cousin, like, what should I really be doing? How did they cut your funding? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that will be interesting because it's one thing to talk to an expert in the field, but when you have a relationship with that person, there's a different component. And sometimes it actually is better. Sometimes it's worse, but I'm very interested to see how that goes. So check that out, Matt Lewis and the news. Always read me at the Daily Beast. Watch me on CNN, and rate and review the podcast, Bill.
All right. Till next week, we'll see if we still have a primary next week or not. After what appears to be a debate on Sunday and some big states on Tuesday, we'll find out.
Florida could get ugly real fast.
Florida.
See you guys.
That's going to blow out. Bye.